Hey guys, Mike here from Mercado Airwaves. We want to thank you so much for all the support you've given us here on the network. And if you want to see what we're up to outside of the station, please follow us all over social media. I'm on Twitter at Mike M Media and on Instagram at Mike Mercado Media. You can follow the good brother Alex Mercado on Twitter at Mercado21Alex and on Instagram at Mercado2121. The lovely Nicole Mancha is on all social media platforms at Typing When Tipsy. You can follow the network on Twitter at Mercado Airwaves. Our pop culture show, The Good Brothers, on Twitter at Good Brothers Pod. Our true crime shows on Instagram at Murder Mysteries and More. And of course, like us on Facebook at Mercado Airwaves. You can see all our videos on YouTube.com/MikeMercado2333 or by searching Mercado Airwaves Network. We play video games on Twitch, twitch.tv/Mercado Airwaves Network. And of course, you could support our network by finding a tier just for you, whether you want early access, you want to be part of polls, you want to win contests. Prizes by visiting us at patreon.com/Mercado Airwaves. And we really appreciate it wherever you get your favorite podcast to like, rate, review, and share us. And please spread the word. For the good brother, Alex Mercado, for the lovely Nicole Mancha, I'm Mike Mercado. Thank you so much for all the support you've given us here on the network. Welcome in, friends, to the best damn pop culture podcast in Chicago, the United States, the universe, the galaxy, the Speed Force, the multiverse, the Spider-Verse. Welcome into the Quarantine Files, brought to you by the Good Brothers here on the Mercado Airwaves Network. I'm your host, Mike Mercado, with the one, the only, the birthday boy, the Good Brother himself, Alex Mercado. How's it going, Good Brother? Happy birthday.
Hey, how's it going?
How have you been? How did you celebrate birthday number 28, good brother?
Well, I celebrated the same way we celebrate everything nowadays, Mike. We quarantine.
And with that in mind, because of quarantine, you have thought up with some evil lists that have made us have to pick between our favorites, and that continues on as our shelter in place continues in the greatest city in the world, Chicago. We want to make sure we are entertaining each and every one of you. So the good brother Alex has been making these lists and making us pick, and we appreciate you joining us on this journey. And this week, the good brother's got another tough one for us. Good brother, what did your evil mind come up with?
So I picked the opposite of what we did last week. And instead of doing billions, we're going to go the opposite and do indie films. The term indie film is it's thrown around a lot. And I guess the way we're going to use it today are really low budget films with at best minimum theater release.
Now, between you and I, we talked about this a lot behind the scenes. We didn't know each other's list, but there was one movie specifically that will not be on this list that some purists will call it an original indie film, and then I think actually makes a better story for its own type of thing. Do you want to explain the movie that I'm referring to and kind of why we made that decision not to include it on this list?
So we're not going to include Star Wars because, one, we're going to do a list of Star Wars movies because they have enough to make a top five. Also, I personally wouldn't consider it an indie film anymore. I think we have a lot better representation of indie films on this list that are in the Star Wars field. Personally, I just think Star Wars deserves its own list. It kind of is bigger than the list itself, and it deserves its own list. And I also think we have enough representation from that genre of indie film that we'll be okay today.
And with that in mind, good brother, why don't we go ahead and start off our top five indie films. And I come in with my number five film, the OG himself, George Romero's Night of the Living Dead. Now, obviously, it's no secret here on the Good Brothers how much you and I not only love horror movies, but how much we love good old-fashioned zombie flicks. And there's nothing better than this original one that still holds up to this day. That shout out to it is part of the public domain, so you could watch it, you could stream it, you could do a lot of different things with that film. And the social commentary in that movie is so ahead of its time. It's beautiful cinematography. It's beautiful story. Even the way it's non-gore works, it's ahead of its time in all of the sense of the word. I know a lot of people hate going to black and white films. This is one of those rare ones that it actually enhances the film. I think color would really hurt. Night of the Living Dead, the original one, deserves its respect. But beyond everything else, it's not just lip service. It's a great movie by a great director. And hell, even in his peak, and we're talking about one of his early films that dealt with social issues that nobody else was doing, and it was a zombie film. Night of the Living Dead is my number five independent film.
It's funny because we can honestly do a list of independent horror films and have so many to go off of. Like you, I put my horror film at number five and I picked a different one. The Living Dead franchise, I love it. And I agree with you. The first one is a classic and really started it off. I personally like the updated version of that film from Zack Snyder, so that's why it really doesn't make my list, but it was an honorable mention. But my number five is also a horror film, but I picked Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
And before we move on to that classic horror movie from the 70s, the Zack Snyder one is Dawn of the Dead, which is essentially a sequel that came from Night of the Living Dead. And I kind of get where you're coming from, where the energy is different. Night of the Living Dead is definitely more stagnant, definitely more slower. It definitely is more of a piece to look upon society, and I think that's what Romero did. Snyder was much more of an action film. It was able to kind of take the genre to a different avenue and bring a different type of lifeblood to it. So I totally see where you're coming from in the genre film and how it changed, but like you said, we don't get that version of Zack Snyder brought us, or we don't get Train to Busan. We don't get any of these great horror movies that you and I love if it wasn't for Night of the Living Dead. And speaking about movies that we absolutely adore, a movie that would make my honorable mentions, it makes your top five. It is one of the great ones. It is The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Why did it come in at number five for you?
As a film, there's nothing too deep about it, honestly. Like, it's not like A Night of the Living Dead where there's a message in there and there's good symbolism. This one is just, it is a great start-off point for the horror genre in the sense of the way it uses sound, the way it uses sight, the way it works your nerves. I think it's one of the very few films from that genre that are still very terrifying. And I think still, if you're flipping through channels and you see it, it's still makes you jump a little bit for such an old film that has aged well in terms of horror film. It's the age makes it scarier almost. And the way they used to use sound back in the day, the eerie silence into something, almost a jump scare without noise though, there's something terrifying about that. So this film, it made my top five for just what it's done, how scary it still is. Again, there's nothing too insightful in there besides it just led the way for horror in a different aspect.
It was a movie that really popularized what was going on at that given moment, where we had movies like Last House on the Left, and we had The Strangers, and just a lot of different type of these revenge horror films that would come off. You know, we had the Town That Sleeps at Dawn or whatnot. So it was an interesting time when the Texas Chainsaw Massacre came out. It is a beautifully shot movie. And the beautifulness of that movie, the impactfulness in that movie is the things that we don't see. It lets us run with our imagination. And that's something that I think a lot of horror movies and even the remakes of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre have had the hardest thing to replicate is we didn't know what to expect there at that given moment. When you watch it for the first time, you don't know what Leatherface is going to do. You don't know what the Sawyer family is all about. You don't know the lore. There hasn't been so many different movies in it. So your mind is putting all the pieces together. And that was the brilliance of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original one. And because of that movie, we would end up getting this between this one and a movie that comes that is also one of my honorable mentions. I don't know if it makes your list, but this and one other specific horror movie in the 70s completely changed cinema and the way we looked at slasher films. And this is one of those rare ones that not only is a great slasher film, but I think most auteurs think The Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a classic. And I agree with you. I think it's a great one to have on your list. And good brother, I come in with another classic, one that for so long was all about the ending, and then as the years went on, we found the nuance and a little more secrets. I'm talking about The Usual Suspects. Now, granted, who the director is, everybody knows what Bryan Singer, kind of the drama that's been going on, right? You have to give props where props are due how brilliant this film is. From the turn at the end, which I'm not going to spoil for you all, to how we got there, the characters, the whole sting itself. The Usual Suspects is what every film student, what every film lover wants to create after they've watched a great whodunit or one of these great Martin Scorsese movies. This is the direct influence of what happened through the 70s, through those dirty era of movies from Coppola and from Martin Scorsese and so on and so forth. And The Usual Suspects is a creation of that. And you can see Bryan Singer, where he got all his inspiration. And the talent pool that came from that freaking movie. I think The Usual Suspects is very underrated because we don't like to talk about who directed it. And obviously it's a movie that once you know the twist ending, it changes your whole view of that film. But when you first walk into seeing that movie and then you see how it ends, I think The Usual Suspects is a great, I don't even know if you would call it a mobster movie, a great bank heist movie, a great con artist movie, but The Usual Suspects is one of the greatest independent films of all time that launched a lot of careers, that helped solidify a lot of careers. That's why it's number four on my list.
Yeah, how do I go about this? One, who directed it, two, who starred in it, both terrible human beings and monsters. I'm not going to lie, it does affect me not putting it on my list. And putting that aside, as a film, I tend to believe it's a little overrated. I think it's good. I think the ending and the characters are bigger than the actual plot. I think it's a little thin in plot toward the middle-ish part. I don't love this movie. I don't love who starred in it. I don't love who directed it. And as a film, I think it's a lot of lives on the ending more than the actual film itself. So I don't agree with you on this, but that's why film is fun, because I can totally see people loving this and arguing for it, but it just never hit me like that. And I guess the drama behind it has only made it worse for me.
Which is totally understandable. And I also, there is a complete gap between this movie and another film that makes my list that I think is just far superior when it comes to not just the genre, but films in general. And you can see it once we get to what that movie that is. I'll circle back to it. But The Usual Suspects, I agree with you. There are some flaws in it. And it is a movie that really relies on the ending. But like you said, I didn't even mention Kevin Spacey throughout this entire thing. But yes, the Kevin Spacey factor. Yeah, the fact that we know what would end up becoming after all these years with these sexual allegations as well. But his performance is the same thing with House of Cards. He was a force as an actor. And that's one thing that sucks about things like that. When you talk about movies like that, you and I love film. And to me, that's one of the things that sucks, is this dude is a powerhouse, and it does put a taste in your mouth when it comes to The Usual Suspects. But I have it as my number four film. Good Brother, what did you have at number four?
On a more positive note, my number four is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. To me, this is Jim Carrey at his best. We see a young Mark Ruffalo, young Kirsten Dunst. Kate Winslet is fantastic in this film. The film basically is just it's a love story, but told in a very realistic sense of people growing together, apart, yet still together. And it's told through basically, in this world, you can erase your ex. In this world, it's a normal world. Very Black Mirror-esque, where there's this one technology that can erase any memory of your ex. So, but to do so, you have to live through all those memories again. And Jim Carrey is very vulnerable in this role. It's very sweet. It's very endearing. There's a lot of hope in it throughout this breakup. And the way it's filmed is very trippy, because it is a dream sense. This, to me, represents independent film at its best, when you have A-list talent with, you know, maybe not the most expensive budget, but the way they're telling the story and the way these actors are really selling the story, it all pays off. And that's what independent film really is at the end of the day.
That is one of the most underrated films of all time. A lot of nerds like us bring it up to people. I think it's a heavy movie for people, because it's, while there is a lot of mysticism, if you will, in it, like there's a lot of like far-fetchedness to it, there's also too much reality in that movie. And I think that's the beauty in it. And the fact that it's Jim Carrey, who just goes to show, maybe I do prefer silly Jim Carrey. Maybe that's selfish of me. But the dude is one of the most talented performers we've ever had. And that was a role where, in a small way, you saw the Jim Carrey-isms in it, right? But it was more along the lines of, what if this was just me and this was happening to me at that moment? And I think that's the brilliance of, like you just said, an independent film with great talent and a story that everybody can sink their teeth into. And it brought out the best in Jim Carrey. And if for nothing else, the fact that we got that on the filmography for him, I think it makes it top tier. Good Brother, speaking of top tier, my number three film was one that, morally speaking, I had a hard time putting it on, not in the sense of The Usual Suspects, but more about the rules of the list. I'm talking about the original, one of the best horror movies of all time, that just so happens to be in the sci-fi realm. I'm talking about The Terminator. This is a great script, Great concept, great acting, great director, became a franchise. But at that moment, nobody knew who Arnold Schwarzenegger was, okay? Nobody knew what James Cameron was about to bring. Nobody saw Terminator 2 coming. Nobody saw this whole entire series and television shows and movies and cartoons and video games coming from the series. This was a story about a robot coming back to the past, chasing a girl who is the mom of the chosen one. And an action hero saves them in one of the greatest eras of action movies of all time, in the beginning stages of what would be the greatest action hero of his time. It's a horror movie. There are points that are scary. There are points that make you think beyond anything people were thinking at that time. Mind you, Star Trek was around. Star Wars had happened. Flash Gordon and whatnot. But this was a turn on time travel. This was a turn on sci-fi. This was a turn on looking at society and how we were moving forward. And guess what? James Cameron got a lot of it right. I think it's different than Star Wars because this didn't become the same type of global phenomenon. Because there's such a difference between Terminator 1, Terminator 2, and the rest of the series. Terminator 1 is almost its own movie, its own universe. I love that movie. It's such an influential movie in my life. Terminator 3, Terminator at number 3 for me.
No, yeah, I consider Terminator an indie film because, like you said, it's not like we get another Terminator in the sequel. We get a whole different genre of Terminator in an action-adventure film, which I'm one of those rare people. I actually like both equally. I think they're both perfect films in their genre. One's a perfect Arnold Terminator horror film, like you said. One is an awesome, funny Arnold Terminator action-adventure film. So I do consider it. It started this trend of films coming out with the film, and then having a whole franchise built off that indie style, but putting money behind it. And to be fair, it really hasn't worked out for a lot of these franchises, but there was a trend of those one and twos just knocking it out, where one came out, great, let's put some money in part two, and part two made that money. So it was one of my honorable mentions, actually.
Good brother, what did make your list at number three?
My number three is Dazed and Confused. And Dazed and Confused is definitely, I think, one of the most popular indie films because it was made for $6 million. It made $8 million. It was the total. You don't have to spend a lot to make a lot. Not a lot of star power at the time. Obviously, now we look at these guys and they're mega Hollywood stars. But at the time, these are young actors. It's a simple coming of age story that everyone can relate to. It doesn't matter what town this is. It doesn't matter who these kids are because we can all relate to that story. Even though it's an old film and it's not meant for our generation, I think it's aged so well into our generation because there's a lot of similarities. We were definitely the throwback also generation. You know, every 20 years you see it kind of come back, and we fell into that. So we could relate to a lot of those things. It's hilarious. The acting's really good, really charming. Dazed and Confused is my number three.
And your number three, good brother, is my number two top independent film. Dazed and Confused is one of my all-time favorite movies. It's a beautiful, like you said, coming-of-age story. It's a story that a lot of people can relate to in its own weird way. It's a privileged movie, obviously, because kids are getting away with murder and they're doing whatever they want. But there's certain types of America, especially that don't grow up in urban America, in one of these major cities, that's a lot like what life is, where their parents aren't always around and the kids kind of do run around the town. There was a certain innocence to that movie. It was 1993, and that was not in a time where weed culture, hippie culture was really popular in the 90s. Mind you, 1993 was in the middle of the grunge era. Nirvana was huge. Why it ended up being such a big hit for kids our age, right? Because kids our ages were becoming high schoolers and college kids. And obviously this subject matter in this movie kind of correlates with that. And on top of it, who just so happens to be in this movie that were becoming the superstars in Hollywood? Matthew McConaughey, Ben Affleck, Mila Jovovich. That's just a couple of them that are in this movie that you could think on top of your head that became royalty in Hollywood. So it all was a perfect storm. And quite frankly, you can find a character in that movie that is you. It is so quotable. The fashion is amazing. The design of the movie and how they shoot it and how we go on this mini adventure and what's the goal at the end of the movie. And the fact that, quite frankly, we love the 70s. We just do. And it wouldn't be an accident that 70s show would be such a success as well. And you can't tell me that there isn't a little residual effect from Dazed and Confused to that movie. The impact of the hippie genre to our generation can squarely be brought back to a movie that was made in 1993 in the middle of the grunge era. Dazed and Confused is amazing. It's so quotable. And if we were doing this on Patreon, we'd go even deeper about it. But it is my number two movie. I love Dazed and Confused. What did you have at number two?
So my number two is No Country for Old Men. And we're really getting, I think, our top two. We're really starting to get into some of the best films in cinema, with Dazed and Confused being one of the best coming-of-age films. Our number one is the same I saw, so we'll talk about that. But And No Country for Old Men is just, it's one of the best, not only one of the best Coen Brother films, which is saying a lot because these are multi-Academy Award-winning and nominated directors. It's one of the best, I would say, Westerns almost, modern Western that we have. Like, it really paved the way for Hell or High Water and other films like that. It's Javier Bardem at his best. And we're talking about a phenomenal actor, but this is him at his best. He creates this character that can't be duplicated, almost like when Heath Ledger did his version of the Joker, where it's this antagonist that you're like, it's almost spiritual. It's almost a monster of sorts, but it's human. And Tommy Lee Jones is just being the veteran actor he is, but to an extreme case where he's narrating you through this movie and it feels so personal, and it really shouldn't feel that personal. The story isn't something we all go through. These aren't people we all know, but for some reason it sets it up that we feel like we do and we take it so serious. And there's nothing wrong with this movie. Even an ending so bold that it decides to do, they nail it. And they shouldn't have nailed it. This movie shouldn't be good. This movie shouldn't feel personal. And this movie shouldn't have stuck the landing. And yet it does all three of those things. It's got some of the best directors in Hollywood with some of the biggest stars. But at the time, it was unheard of what it did.
Good, brother. This is going to be the first time that I've ever done this on the Quarantine Files, brought to you by the Good Brothers here on the Mercado Airwaves Network. On the air, I need to make an addendum. I need to make a change on my list, because No Country for Old Men is one of my top 10 favorite films of all time, and it did not make my top 5 independent films. From the scene of him in the gas station talking to the old man and flipping the coin, and it ends up being that he's not going to get killed with the cattle prod, right? But he tells him, don't put that coin with the rest of them. That's a lucky one. That's a special one. Seems like nothing when little old me says it. But with one of the greatest acting performances of all time by Javier Bardem in that film, the scene of him tracking the money and Josh Brolin is just running for his life and for the longest time is really outsmarting him. But little do we know that Javier Bardem is Jaws, essentially. And then nothing was going to stop him. But the one scene that solidified this man as royalty, Tommy Lee Jones telling the story about him and his father and his dreams, changes you as a human if you have any type of relationship with your father. And especially the moment he's like, I'm older than he is now. And just that idea of what has this man seen? We don't spend a lot of time with Tommy Lee Jones in that sense. That the action and adventure isn't through Tommy Lee Jones. But we feel everything that character went through in that one moment. And obviously Woody Harrelson and his whole adventure throughout that entire thing. I adore No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, it's the second best movie on this list.
And with that in mind, good brother, what did we have as our number one top independent film?
It's the only number one when you're talking about independent film. It is the independent film to end all independent films. It's honestly one of the greatest films of all time. It is Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction revolutionized the indie film. It made Quentin Tarantino's career. We could have easily put Reservoir Dogs, but again, Pulp Fiction is just the better version of that. Again, we're talking about a director like Quentin Tarantino who has, I think, made not one of his movies has not been nominated for an Academy Award. I know people go half and half on him, but overall, it's hard to not say he's one of the greatest directors of our generation of all time, and this is his best creation ever. It is a perfect film, and I know we just used it for No Country for Old Men, but guess what? This is also a perfect film, even better, because it tells almost three mini perfect films in it. Why was it your number one?
Good brother. Quentin Tarantino is a great director. The one thing nobody in Hollywood, not Scorsese, not Nolan, not Spielberg, not Howard, go down the list. Nobody touches this man with dialogue. Nobody touches this man when it comes to making his script and his characters sound amazing, believable, and interesting. Pulp Fiction has some of the greatest 15 minutes at a time moments of actors speaking and telling us some of the greatest words written in cinema. From the stick-up scene in the dining, to driving to dinner, to the dinner scene, to the ODing scene, to the boxing scene, to the pawn shop scene, on and on and on. You don't have to mention one thing of a gun being shot, one time about Ezekiel giving you a passage, nothing. The only thing I ever have to tell you is watch them talk for 5 minutes. Not many movies can just suck you in by people speaking in front of a camera. But damn it, if Samuel L. Jackson doesn't do it, if John Travolta doesn't do it, if Uma Thurman doesn't do it, damn if this is not one of the greatest movies of all time. And I will say it right now, it is Quentin Tarantino's best movie. Pulp Fiction's amazing.
There's so much in this movie that really shouldn't work, but because he tells the story so well, because his dialogue is so crisp and just so good, it's not even that it's this everyday dialogue. Like, there are certain directors that can really capture the everyday and do it really nice. That's not what he's doing. He's creating his own language almost and his own universe. And it's so interesting. It's so fascinating. He's someone that this movie is so good. People question all his modern hits because this is so good. It's almost like you peaked way too early, even though all his movies are on this level. This is just a film of films. This is what they teach at college. This film is the reason they teach film at college almost.
Good brother, I think the amazing fans of The Quarantine Files, brought to you by the Good Brothers here on Mercado Airwaves, have earned this one. I think you've earned it as well.
You read the Bible, Greg?
Yes.
Well, there's this passage I got memorized. Sort of fits this occasion. Ezekiel 25:17. The path of the righteous man is beset on all sides by the inequities of the selfish and the tyranny of evil men. Blessed is he who in the name of charity and goodwill shepherds the weak through the valley of darkness, for he is truly his brother's keeper and the finder of lost children. And I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger those who attempt to poison and destroy my brothers. And you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
Good brother, what is your favorite scene from Pulp Fiction?
It's tough because I love that movie. And I'll be honest, every day it changes, but it's either Pulp Fiction or Goodfellas are my favorite films of all time. And then The Dark Knight would be number three no matter what. But one and two always changes between those two films. Pulp Fiction usually wins. It's the movie I've seen the most times straight through. I've seen it 13 times straight through. That's not including anything else. That's not including the AMC runs. That's literally sit down, watch the movie straight through 13 times. I know everything about this movie. I think the John Travolta date in the beginning is probably the first snippet is probably my favorite. Uma Thurman, John Travolta. And it's funny because that's probably the most simple one in the sense of the movie gets really extreme, really hardcore. But yeah, that would have anything with John Travolta in it is definitely my favorite. He's my favorite in the movie. I love his character. I love everything he does. So I would say the first part with him and Uma, But overall, anything with John Travolta in the movie is my favorite part.
If we get enough people on Patreon, the Good Brother and I will be the Vega brothers for Halloween one of these years, because they are some of the greatest Quentin Tarantino characters of all time. Do you ever feel we got robbed that we didn't get a movie with those two, with James Madsen and John Travolta?
Again, this man gave us so much. Like,
I want more, Alex.
Yeah, that's like saying, am I mad I don't have a Star Wars Marvel crossover? Sure, but what more can I ask for as a fan? Quentin Tarantino, like, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was one of my favorite films last year. He got Brad Pitt his Oscar. Like, I don't know what more I can ask the man for.
Good Brother, did you have any honorable mentions before we move on and run these bad boys down?
I had Requiem for a Dream, which is a great movie.
Great movie.
Way too hard. Reservoir Dogs and The Blair Witch Project.
I love all of them. I also wanted to make that point to circle back. Pulp Fiction is everything The Usual Suspects wants to be. This is the difference where you can see that there's levels to this game. The Usual Suspects, a great whodunit, a great mystery, a great scheme, all that and all whatnot, violence and all that. And then you watch a movie like Pulp Fiction, you're like, oh, I get it. Now I see. Just like in sports, just like in industry, there's levels to these games, and Quentin definitely showed the levels there. My honorable mentions, Get Out. I love one of the best modern day horror movies, a great jumping point for minorities when it comes to actors and when it comes to people behind the scenes. A lot of things behind that movie that maybe 30 years from now we'll even love it even more, and obviously an Oscar winner for our boy. I had the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Halloween, one of our favorite movies, Good Brother. One of the movies that I could say really influence you and I when it comes to our love for film and cinema. Before we move on, Halloween didn't make your list, but James Carpenter and obviously all the movies that he's brought us and that specific Halloween franchise. What do you think about that?
Yeah, as an indie film, it didn't make my list. As a horror film, it does. And just as a fun character slasher film, but definitely as an indie, I had my standard was a little different. So that's why I think Texas Chainsaw Massacre was a better representation of that indie style than Halloween was. But Halloween is a fantastic film, one of the best horror movies of all time.
And any love for Friday the 13th, the first one, before we move on?
No, Friday the 13th is really bad, and it's the proof that people know the title more than the actual film, because whenever you really ask people, they like part 2 and 3 better than they actually like part 1. Okay. I think it's confusion where people think they're watching the original and they're actually watching the sequel, or in this case, the third one, before they really realize, oh, that's the one I like. I really don't. I've never even seen Friday the 13th.
Friday the 13th are my guilty pleasures. Honestly, you and I, and even not so much Super Mercado Bro Marcos, but if we're talking about indie films, AMC does a lot of great stuff with indie films, and we've always been huge Fright Fest guys. So to me, like, I don't care. I think Halloween's, all the sequels, and the Friday the 13th, even though they're original independent films, were kind of loved and beloved and groundbreaking. While those sequels suck, that's kind of where you and I really got introduced to these films. But Good Brother, you ready to run down these bad boys?
Yeah.
At number 5, I had Night of the Living Dead, the original. The Good Brother had
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
At number 4, I had The Usual Suspects. The Good Brother had
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
At number 3, I had The Terminator. The Good Brother had
Dazed and Confused.
At number 2, I had Dazed and Confused. Good Brother had
No Country for Old Men.
And our number 1 film in our top 5 independent film list here on the Quarantine Files, brought to you by the Good Brothers on the Mercado Airwaves Network,
Pulp Fiction.
Good Brother, what a fun list. You know, it's interesting, the definition of independent film, it's very elusive. Nowadays, everybody's owned by somebody. There's a subsidiary somewhere. You could find the family tree, but a lot of these films, especially those older films from the 80s, the early 90s, there is a cool uniqueness to them. As we're wrapping this up, what are your final thoughts about independent films, kind of the states of independent films? And you and I being such, you know, we love pop culture and we love mainstream culture, but we do love the independent side of this. What are your final thoughts of the genre itself and kind of the future of it, from where it came from, for where it is now, and what you see down the road?
True independent is kind of a growing field where it's not the same as it used to be, because there is a lot of star power in there and there's money everywhere, especially with Netflix and the at-home services. I think it's in a great spot though. It's a really fun spot where we don't need a ton of money to make these films, but these huge celebrities and these big directors are finding their niche and still going back and giving us a little something, a smaller film, I think horror has grown from it. I think dramas have grown for it. And I think it's just getting started. This last year, Parasite would almost be considered one, but it had a little bit more money than a true independent film. But I would consider it on that level. And same with Uncut Gems. These are small films that only really got released once they got so popular.
And I guess since we have a second and we haven't had a Good Brothers proper, what do you think then when you know all these movies come out and then the number one complaint you see on social media is there's never originality. There's never a new movie. Everything's a sequel or a remake. That can't be further from the truth, isn't it?
Yeah, there's plenty out there, but there's almost too much out there. And I think that's the problem is when there's so much, it gets distilled, all the good stuff.
Very interesting point. The parody around it and the fact that there's too much accessibility out there. Very interesting point. Something that you and I will definitely get into a conversation when we're able to be in the brand new studio, Good Brother. Hopefully soon the group will be all back together. But until then, we will be doing these quarantine files. We love them so much. The Good Brother has some evil ideas to make us pick between our favorites. And it has been an absolute blast. Make sure you're following us on socials. The Good Brother is on Twitter at Mercado21Alex and on Instagram at Mercado2121. I'm on Twitter at Mike M Media and on Instagram at Mike Mercado Media. Like us on Facebook at Mercado Airwaves. Like, rate, review, and share us wherever you get your favorite podcast at Mercado Airwaves. Subscribe to us on YouTube, youtube.com/Mercado Airwaves Network. Play video games with us on Twitch, twitch.tv/Mercado Airwaves Network. And you could support us by visiting us at patreon.com/Mercado Airwaves, the home to our interviews with athletes and celebrities that you can listen to ad-free and before anybody else. That's patreon.com/Mercado Airwaves. For the Good Brother himself, Alex Mercado.
Adios.
I'm the Good Brother, Mike Mercado. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Quarantine Files, brought to you by the Good Brothers on the Mercado Airwaves Network. Hey guys, Mike here from Mercado Airwaves. We want to thank you so much for all the support you've given us here on the network. And if you want to see what we're up to outside of the station, please follow us all over social media. I'm on Twitter at Mike M Media and on Instagram at Mike Mercado Media. You can follow the Good Brother Alex Mercado on Twitter at Mercado21Alex and on Instagram at Mercado2121. The lovely Nicole Mancha is on all social media platforms at Typing When Tipsy. You can follow the network on Twitter at Mercado Airwaves. Our pop culture show, The Good Brothers, on Twitter at Good Brothers Pod. Our true crime shows on Instagram at Murder Mysteries and More. And of course, like us on Facebook at Mercado Airwaves. You can see all our videos on youtube.com/MikeMercado2333 or by searching Mercado Airwaves Network. We play video games on Twitch, twitch.tv/Mercado Airwaves Network. And of course, you could support our network by finding a tier just for you, whether you want early access, you want to be part of polls, you want to win contests, prizes by visiting us at patreon.com/Mercado Airwaves. And we really appreciate it wherever you get your favorite podcast to like, rate, review, and share us. And please spread the word. For the Good Brother, Alex Mercado, for the lovely Nicole Mancha, I'm Mike Mercado. Thank you so much for all the support you've given us here on the network.